Hey guys, so good to have you here. This is season one, episode three of Overcrest. Today, my guest host is Jake, a good friend of mine and a true car enthusiast. We're going to, of course, get to some news, but we're going to circle back and talk about some topics that I missed. Widowmakers, dirty diesels, and then I've got two new segments for you guys, the Craigslist car of the week and our top four cars. But before I get started, I want to talk a little bit about one of our sponsors, Further Performance. They're a Minneapolis-based automotive repair, restoration, and performance shop. They specialize in European cars and are experienced in all aspects of headlight to tailpipe repair. Find Further Performance on Facebook at fptuned.com, F-P-T-U-N-E-D.com, and their Instagram is fptuned, fptuned. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us. This is Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
And this is episode three, so this is our third go at it.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we'll see how we do. So this is going to be our third guest host. We had
Alex.
Yep. And then we had Glenn.
And Glenn.
And now we have you.
Yeah. So, and I feel
why are you here?
Well, that's a good question. I was going to say, I feel like I have to manage expectations right out the door and set the bar low for myself because I have absolutely no qualifications to be here whatsoever. Alex, you know, he was a great videographer, and Glenn is this amazing automotive illustrator. I'm just like a car guy.
I guess. Just a guy that shouldn't be selling his 996.
Sold, past tense.
No.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
All right.
So I sold myself short. I mean, now I have to build myself up.
I was
going to
build you up a little bit, but then I thought I'd let you wallow in it for a little bit in your self-pity. And
I was going to try to humble brag, but.
No, but one of the reasons why I've had you here is because I've hung out with you through the car club and stuff like that, and I've seen some of the cars you've built, and I've seen your enthusiasm for some of the rare stuff like the H3 and just your just crazy enthusiasm for that manual H3. Or it's H3, right?
It is. Yeah.
The enthusiasm for that thing it's weird a little bit.
I am weird.
It's weird. And you have an eclectic thing.
I have a propensity to be gravitated towards really, really weird cars.
Okay. Yeah. I would agree with that. So why don't you tell me a little bit about the story of your 996, which now is gone, Yeah, I was going to try and spend part of this, I was going to ambush you.
Too late. I don't know. It's kind of, I'll start from the beginning. I went and bought a 911 a year and a half ago, is how short that ownership was.
Even shorter if you consider how much time you were actually able to drive it.
So start from the beginning. Don't get ahead of ourselves. So yeah, I was able to convince the wife somewhat of buying a 911, and that's always been a dream of mine.
She just wanted to get out of it and be like, hey, I think.
Yeah, I know. Well, who doesn't want to?
Yeah, exactly.
So, no, I found a 996 in my price range, and it's anyone who knows kind of the 911 line and is a Porsche nerd knows that 996 is kind of the ugly stepchild of the 911 world. And a lot of that is attributed to the M96 engine, which a lot of times can have the IMS failure
a
and
lot
all
of the
these
times.
Others. Well, okay. We could get into that too, because I think that's way overhyped.
Yeah, you're probably right. I wonder how many 996s are just driving around with the guy has no clue.
A ton of them.
No clue that everybody else on the internet is just.
The vast majority of them.
Like if they would meet him in a parking lot, they'd be like, dude, did you do your IMS bearing yet?
Right.
And the guy would be like, no.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He's
exactly.
Got his coffee cup and he's like, what do you mean? What do you
right.
mean? I'm just here at Half Price Books. Just
there's a stereotype. No, so I found this 996, and really the reason I was gravitated towards this one, all of that hysterics aside, is because the real centerpiece of this was that the engine was rebuilt.
It was rebuilt. It was getting reliable
to a 4-liter.
Yeah, and it had all the IMS stuff.
IMS
done.
Was done.
All rebuilt.
RMS. Yeah, I mean, basically it was all set and bulletproof.
Yep.
Or so I thought. So I enjoyed it. I bought it late
last
summer.
Slightly slower than my car.
I don't know if that would is true.
I raced that car.
Oh. Well, not with me.
Not with you. But the previous owner was a pretty good driver.
Yeah.
Are you saying you're a power shifting, like aficionado?
Oh, yeah.
Well, like,
you know,
micro shifts?
I put in the short shifter, so that makes all the difference in the world, Chris.
Okay.
No, so I bought it late last summer, enjoyed it for quite a while, and then put away for storage in the winter. And I had it all lined up, looking forward to spring. You know how it goes here in Minnesota, where you're just, you're jonesing to get the car back out. And so I get out there, and I sign up for a Porsche track day event. Our local PCA club holds a spring fling.
At Brainerd, I imagine.
Up at Brainerd International. Yeah. And so this was my first time going up there with this local Porsche club. I didn't know how strict they were. They said you had to have a tech inspection done ahead of time.
Right.
So I said, okay, I'll go by the book. And I got a buddy who works at the local Porsche dealer here. And so I called him up, brought it up there. Car's running cherry. We get over to the dealer. He hops in, puts it on the lift, and all of a sudden it's knocking terribly. Like, there's a huge misfire.
How many miles did you have on it by then? What was the...
So on the rebuild of the engine was probably 3,000 or 4,000.
Okay.
3,000, of which I put maybe like 800 miles on.
Right.
If that.
Yep.
So that was just a sinking feeling.
Maybe he blew it up when he was racing me.
So I should blame you. Yeah, what you're sure. Saying. Yeah. Okay. So we get it up on the lift. I'm back there with him. And we're going through checking all the easy stuff. It's not coil packs. It's not plugs.
It sound awful.
It sounded really bad.
Yeah.
And it wasn't fuel.
Have you ever heard an engine knock before?
Yes.
Yeah, so you had a pretty good idea.
Well, luckily it wasn't an engine knock.
Yeah.
It was just a really bad miss. Mm-hmm. And so after spending a while diagnosing, we end up running compression on it. Good, good, good. We get to cylinder number 5. Zero.
Zero.
No compression
Nothing.
At all.
Okay.
So I'm fearing the worst, thinking there's going to be a giant pole in my piston. And we get in there with the scope and realize that the valve seat had dropped.
Yeah.
So I talked to the previous owner, who is a mutual friend of ours, and he's a stand-up guy. He helped me out, worked with me. Absolutely. So
I'm really impressed by that.
I am,
you know,
too.
That he took care of you on that. He did not have to do that.
No.
That was a huge monumental task for him to basically rebuild that engine again.
Yeah. Well, and it was a huge relief for me. So
were you just like, fuck this car. This car is cursed. I'm done.
Yeah, so
had a chance to enjoy the car. You never enjoyed it. You prematurely sold the car. You never got to appreciate it. You didn't get to drive it for a summer. You didn't get to go on any tours. You didn't do anything.
True.
You didn't do anything. Did you even go to, where did you, you didn't, I'm so disappointed.
I love how upset you are.
I am upset.
This.
I'm upset that you didn't give it a chance. I'm upset.
Yeah.
That's like dating this girl that is potentially perfect, screwed up in the beginning of the relationship, comes crawling back for more, and you're like, nah, I'm over it. Even though she could be the perfect girl, you're just one strike out.
I got high standards here, Chris. Women and cars. One done. One and done.
One and done. That's it.
So, we pulled the engine out, took the heads off, shipped the heads back down to a builder who took care of them, put the car back together. I put the heads back on the engine. We put it all together. It was good to go. And then I kind of just had, from that point on, it left a sour taste in my mouth. Like, ironically, that was probably the strongest 996 engine out there.
Yeah, for sure.
Because everything had been addressed on it.
Right.
But I still kind of had this, like, this itching feeling in the back of my head that it's going to blow up again.
Something's going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. That, and remember when I said that, you know, I convinced my wife to buy this? Well, she wasn't totally on board.
And when all that happened, it was kind of
that was the final nail in the coffin. So
it's like having someone with leprosy in the garage. Basically,
right.
Just waiting.
Yeah,
for
hopefully
something.
It's not contagious.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Our other fleet of cars.
So it's gone. Where'd it go?
Yeah. So I sold it through Renlist, through the forums, and it was a guy, very interesting guy from Ohio, and he was actually a Honda engineer who races in this international series and just needed this as like his fun car on the side. So he was a great guy. New Porsches. He flew up. Checked it out and drove it back. So, the long story short, the car is now out of my possession, officially gone. I don't think you can talk me out of it at this point.
Yeah, I guess not. It'd be like raising somebody from the dead. It's just not going to happen, no matter how much you want it to. So now we've moved on, and you told me that you were looking at Lotuses. Now, is this kind of like
Lodi?
Lodi. Lotuses, Lodi.
I don't know. Yeah.
Is this because of your MG? Did you fall in love with the MG and you're looking for like the natural evolution of self-torture, or what's the...
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, the wild hair up my ass once I sold the Porsche was I'm going to consolidate my projects. I also have this.
Do you
MG
still have the
project.
MG?
I do.
Still, okay.
And I have a story about in the process of selling that.
You are in the process of.
It's listed for sale if I can get what I want out of it.
Okay.
I'll let it go. Otherwise, I'm not in a huge
rush. So what's the story?
So
test drive story. Or?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. So this is kind of a wild project of mine. It started out as just an MG midget kind of beater. And I did a bunch of body work, brought it up to snuff. And I also went and fabricated a turbo kit for it as well.
Yep.
So it's not, I mean, with any aftermarket turbo, it's like no power, no power, lag, 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 and then boost.
Well, it's a blow through. It's carb still.
Right.
So it's a blow through. Yeah, or is it pull?
No, it's a blow through setup, which was a whole other mess of tuning, wizardry, and a pain in the ass.
We won't go there. That's
no, we won't. That could take up hours of another show.
Maybe we should start a carb tuning podcast because you could fill.
Yeah, I could probably fill hours of that.
Anyway.
But at any rate, so I had a guy who was interested. He comes out. And
Did he know the details of the car that had the turbo and stuff like that?
Here's the problem. I listed everything on this, and I have a huge build thread as well that I would link to in these ads. People don't read. I'm convinced.
Really?
Yeah.
Was this on Craigslist?
I sensed some sarcasm.
Yeah, was this Craigslist?
Yeah, it was Craigslist, and I think it was you know, Facebook Marketplace, which is even worse. That's a
little bit. At least there's some accountability there, so you can like Bob
go back.
Joey Berditzman is interested in your MG, and you click on Joey Berditzman, and there's them with a Confederate flag in the background,
right?
And you're like, sorry, it's sold, or you just don't respond, or whatever.
Right? You can
Craigslist
do that.
And is like totally anonymous. Times. Totally anonymous. Anybody could be showing up.
So this guy seemed fairly interested, but I love this with this particular car and a lot of these projects. I mean, you want someone who knows cars and isn't afraid to tinker with it.
Right. Because you don't want them to be calling you being like, so this thing at 3200 RPMs,
which has happened before. Yeah. I sold an old motorcycle that, guy hounded me afterward. But at any rate, I think three different people who have come to look at this car, first thing out of their mouth. You know, I'm not a big car guy. I don't know much about cars. And I'm just like, why are you here? This is not what you should be looking for.
No.
So that was the first thing.
Well, you can look for an MG, but not that one.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing out of this guy's mouth. I'm like, okay. But he's seriously interested in it. Yep. He has the budget. So I'm like, all right, I'll walk you through it. And as you well know, it's officially winter here. So it's colder out.
Yeah.
The streets are all dry, cold.
Yeah. Yep.
And so he's like, all right, well, can you take me out on a ride? I was like, sure. Well, I
hadn't
really ever driven this thing.
What could possibly go wrong?
Our compound tires in the cold. And so we're going around the little roundabout by my house, and I'm kind of showboating, want to sell the car. And all of a sudden, the rear end goes loose. I'm 90 degrees facing the inside of the roundabout, overcracked, facing the outside of the roundabout. I think I fishtailed probably four times.
Yeah.
That's
three more times than it being cool. Because it could have been cool.
It could have been cool.
Because haven't you always wanted to drift a roundabout?
Right. And that would have been great if I just kept going.
Because he would have bought it on the spot and money would have just, it would have ejected from his pocket right into your lap.
And that would have been ideal. But the story ends up where I actually just kind of put it over a curb.
Oh, no.
And then I think he got scared away.
Yeah, I bet he did.
Not the way to sell
it. So you still have it?
I do.
Okay. We'll give out your phone number at the end of the ad for all the people that want to buy it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So you were asking about my interest in Lotuses.
I don't even want to know. Let's just move on.
Okay.
No, I love Lotuses. Go ahead.
No, you don't.
I don't like getting in them. It's awful because you have to climb. You basically have
That's
to climb over
the
a
appeal.
Fence. You have to climb over a fence to get in the car.
Yeah. No. The sill on it is like over a foot wide.
Yeah.
And it's the chassis.
I know. I can't.
All right. We're going to probably have to agree to disagree on that then.
They are cool cars. To be fair, I have not driven one.
Okay.
I haven't driven one.
That kind of
is all.
What hooks you?
Yeah. Do I want to? I don't know if I want to drive one.
Should we set that up and we can record it for the show?
Yeah, we'll see. Chris drives the.
Chris drives a Lotus.
Yeah. We'll get into it later. Someone was trying to get me to drive a Tesla the other day too.
That could be interesting.
Which I'm gonna go do it.
Yeah, it's like the crotchety old man drives all the cars he doesn't want
to
like.
Oh God! All right. So I'd like to give a nod to Westside Volkswagen, another one of our sponsors. They sold me my first car when I came here to Minnesota. It was a 1995 Volkswagen Passat. But they've always got a great selection of European cars, the biggest around actually, and I think they're one of the top selling Volkswagen dealerships in the entire country. Great dudes over there, wonderful sales staff. Stop by and see them if you're looking for a new car, used car. Got one of the best selections out there. WestsideVW.com. Let's go into some news. We can go right there. I've got a couple news stories today. Where are they?
I got them here if you want.
No, I got it.
Okay.
That's yours. That's your story. All right.
This is a peek behind the curtain.
So We'll go with the kind of a happy story first that I can talk a little bit of history with. This came out on December 1st. This is from Porsche's press release page. This is one you might not have seen this because I added it to the
I don't think so.
Late.
No.
Porsche reports all-time monthly sales record.
Really?
Porsche Cars North America announced November 2017 sales of 5,000. Who cares how many units?
Well, this is 90% are Cayennes.
Yes, but I'm gonna.
Do they give a breakdown?
They do.
Okay.
It's a 0.8% increase over November in 2016. Year to date, retail deliveries are up 2.5%, which is
that's significant.
Good. That's significant. With 5,500, who cares deliveries? We set an all-time monthly record. In particular, our two-door sports cars, the 911 and the Boxster model line, showed impressive double-digit growth versus last
year. Wow.
So that's actually pretty cool because normally it's the, you know, it's the SUVs.
Well,
and
yeah, that's always been their cash cow ever since they came out with the Cayenne, as well as the Panamera now and the Macan.
Yep. So in 2017, in November, they sold 1,300 Cayennes. Now they sold 1,500.
Okay.
But the 911 was... 2016 was 700 and up to 976. So that's look at how eclipsed they
are.
Well, I was
going to say, run those numbers again.
13, but they dropped. So the Cayenne dropped 1572
Everyone
to 1347. But the 911 went from 699 to 976. And I don't know if that's happened before where the 911 sales surged and the Cayennes dropped.
Probably not since they introduced the Cayenne or their SUVs.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty interesting.
That is interesting.
Now, I wanted to touch a little bit about I wanted to see your impression because you're not necessarily a Porsche guy, especially not anymore.
Right. Yeah.
But
I've jumped
why
off
do
that
you
train.
Think Porsche's success is what it is in America? How did we get here to the point where the Porsche is basically the elite sports car in America? Unless you can
is
think
it?
What isn't? What is better?
You're jaded, I think.
A little bit. Jaded. What are you going to drive, a ZL1? You really going to pick a ZL1 over a 911
Turbo or
something?
I think most people out in the street would.
I don't think so, man.
Really?
No, I don't think it's true.
Drive around. What do you see first, a Corvette or a 911?
I'm not saying what people necessarily would want. I'm saying what is kind of seen. When you look at maybe I'm just inundated with marketing all the time.
Right.
But when I
we
watch.
All are.
Yeah, but even when I watch like.
So you're saying that's kind of what people aspire to.
It's what they aspire to. But if you look on like Velocity or Top Gear or Grand Tour or whatever, the 911 is always kind of held up, unless you're Jeremy Clarkson, always held up. But even he admits it from time to time. They're great.
The fancy
Beetle.
They're
awesome. And they always make a joke out of something like the Hellcat, right? All the shows are, it's like, oh, it's this thing.
Okay.
But it's always kind of like the butt of a joke a little bit.
Because it's the exception.
Yeah, but it's this thing that does all these burnouts and wears all these tires, and you need to have an American flag flying from the antenna. And
it's because we're watching Top Gear, a British show, making fun of it.
Right, but the only person that wouldn't do that is the guy on what's the most boring automotive review thing? Anyway, some guy on walking around the car with a camera on YouTube is the only guy that's not going to do that. Everybody else is. It's kind of like the brunt of a joke, but it's amazing. Don't get me wrong. I have a Hellcat shirt. I actually thought about. Man, I could sell my car and get a Hellcat.
Well, we know someone that sold a 911.
We do.
And got a Hellcat.
And he's the one that bought me the shirt. Because he thought he was going to be able to talk me into it. Because I was seriously thinking about it.
So were you?
Yeah, I was. And this isn't...
That I can't believe.
It's the absolute truth. You can ask my wife.
Wow.
I was really thinking about it. I called the dealership. And I was going to go down and drive one. But then I didn't.
Yeah? I wonder if that would have convinced you at the time.
I don't know, man. For me, power has never been the thing that I want to chase. It's never,
I know
chasing power is not.
And that's not kind of the American way, right?
No, it's not.
America's land of burnouts and apple pie.
Right. But I wanted to, why do you think Porsche is a successful, take it away from the way I think it, which is
okay.
they're the best brand that sells cars here, because I'm super biased. But why do you think they're as successful as they are in this market?
I don't think it's just this market.
This is their biggest market, hands down.
Yeah, I think that could be said for most, well, except for Buick, that China's the
But you have to admit
market,
that the car culture here and the car culture in Europe
yeah.
is different.
It is very different.
So why here? Why is this German company so successful here?
That's a good question. I think they've always kind of been a benchmark, if not the pinnacle, right? Because you think about road and track back in the 60s even. They would have the 911 against the newest Corvette. That always been kind of the head-to-head there. Now, granted, they're on totally different planes as far as, you know, fit and finish and the actual brand panache of a Porsche versus a Corvette. But I think they've always been kind of a benchmark. So
what other car has had a benchmark for that long? If you look at the 911 came out in 1964 or whatever, and from that point on,
right? It's been here. You know what? It's just the
same shape. Same shape.
Well, yeah, the entire time. That's the brunch of the joke right there. They all look the same.
They do. They do. There's a racist joke in there somewhere, but I'm not.
Okay. What I was reminded of, though, by talking about.
That's excellent. They have, the Mustang and stuff like that looks different all the time, except now they went back and they finally got it, right? And Chevy finally got it with the Camaro, and Dodge finally got it with the Charger.
That's retro throwback, which I could argue against.
Porsche doesn't have to be the retro throwback because it's always been there. It's like having your dad leave when you're like 6 years old and then he comes back when you're 40 and expects you to still be friends.
He did, Chris.
Then you know exactly what I'm talking about. So you have this gap in the middle of this entire culture where the cars all sucked. They all sucked. Like a Mustang in like 1982 is a shitty car.
Right.
It's junk. But the 911 has always been something that people aspired that was very good. True. It always had race wins. They were always there from.
That's a good point. Maybe that is part of what makes it such a desirable car, is it has this heritage and it has this motorsport connection that most cars don't have that direct connection. Marketing may say that they're race cars for the road, but in reality, I don't think anything has such a long-standing history like the 911.
It wasn't always that way. I mean, I don't think it ever came about till they didn't really even race the 911 seriously until 73. You know, they won the 24 Hours of Daytona. It was kind of a stunning win with the RSR, which at the time was still considered a prototype. They had however many homologations that they had to have.
Yep.
And they actually didn't get approved for the homologation until afterwards. So it was considered a prototype.
Those weren't the Moby Dick cars, were they?
No, this is just like if you've seen the Girard turntable car, or the Sunoco car. It's like, I just posted the picture of that car.
Yep. That's the only reason I know that.
So that's an RSR. So that won at 24 Hours of Daytona. And right around the same time, they were dominating a Can-Am. So coming into Can-Am with a twin turbo flat 12 or whatever, and then going up against, 750 cubic inch V8s or whatever they were for size. I'm not a huge cubic inch guy, but.
That might be a bit high, but okay.
They pounded them. Maybe it is. I don't know. 750 cubic inches. That's a lot, right?
That would be a lot. That's more than your Hellcat you were going to buy.
Yeah. Well, anyway, maybe it was 750 horsepower. It was 750 horsepower. Yep. But they dominated. They crushed these guys. So they came in and they did it with like American liveries, right? So they bring these Porsches in with American liveries and just shit all over everybody. Before that, they were racing 356s in the autocross.
True. So it was a huge step up.
It was a huge step. So from then on in the early 70s, they kind of had the motorsport thing kind of figured out from there. And then I think that's what added legitimacy. Because before that, all it is a quirky, shitty little car.
I think you're right. I don't think they sold that well in the U.S. before that.
No,
so maybe that is the turning point.
Yeah, it could be.
I think we could argue back and forth. I mean, it's basically two guys who like 911s arguing how great 911s are. I don't know if that really is all that accurate or relevant. Well,
I mean, there's other marks that do fantastic in motorsport too. Obviously, the E30 M3 and stuff like that. But I still don't think there's any model or brand that's had continuous usage for all of this time. And I want to circle back. And the reason I mentioned all this is because when you see the 911 starting to take off, the marketing that Porsche has been doing with the 911, what they've been able to do with the GT2 at the Nürburgring, and they had a new record or whatever.
The GT2 RS, the new model.
Yep. Just
totally eclipsed.
Fast as shit, right? Yep. It's just an incredible, incredible car.
Well, until we get your Tesla out there, Chris.
Yeah. Well, that thing's going to... My thought is those things are going to... They're fast, but they're going to burn up. I bet they can't go wide open throttle. Wide open potentiometer.
Capacitors?
Yeah. Put your potentiometer to the floor. Not that all the other cars don't have potentiometers anyway, but anyway. So I think that that's what's allowed them to have this success that they have, is they can be like, look, that's what we did. This is what we're doing. Rather than
race on Sunday, buy on Monday.
Rather than just be like, this is what we're doing. They can harken back to this other stuff. So good job on Porsche. We'll see. I'll never be able to afford any of these cars. They're so expensive. It's even just like 911 Carrera. I don't know what the MSRP on this stuff is, because I haven't even looked, because it doesn't matter.
It's too much for us.
I could sell my car and get a 997 Carrera, which still has shitty motor in it.
I've been looking at those a little bit, too.
Oh, yeah?
I have.
Should we go drive some?
Yeah, I have.
Okay.
No, we should talk about this.
They have IMS problems, too.
I know they do. It's the same engine, basically. Yep. M97 block instead of M96. But, I mean, the thing about the new Porsches in any new car, performance car or not, that kind of bugs me is I like simplicity, raw driving experience, even in, like, my daily commuter.
Yep.
Whereas you look at any of these 911s, even a base model 911, there's so much technology.
Yeah.
And granted, the way they design these.
They're so nice.
It's
too much.
Do you want a luxury car?
No, it's like the fastest couch you've ever
been. Exactly. It's the old adage, it's more fun to drive a slow car fast than a fast car slow, still applies.
Yeah.
So that's why I want to
slow. Well, the thing is, like, if you let's say that GT2 RS, you're going to buy one of those, right? You're a 918 customer now, which means that you are allowed to buy one.
That's kind of the old Ferrari mentality, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's official, or like a dealer type thing.
Well, I don't know how many they're making. It's probably that they only have, 2,000 customers, and they all happen to have 918s already.
That could be.
I'm buying a new GT2 RS.
Awesome. We'll do it live.
No, I'm continuing. You were saying this hypothetical.
Oh, I thought you were. I'm like, yes, that sounds great. I don't make
that much money, Chris.
So this car is, you can't drive that on the road, on the public streets.
Well, but it's boring.
You're going 210 miles an hour, whatever the max speed of the monster is, and like instantly. The limits are so high, you're going to hurt somebody.
You're never going to be able to approach those limits.
No. Well, you can, but you're going to go to jail or you're going to go into the dirt. That's pretty much the two options for you.
Yeah, and it's not like a midget hopping a curb. You're probably going to die after that.
No, absolutely. Things going to burn to the ground. So you got a new story. Do you want to go through that one?
Yeah, let me see here. So Los Angeles.
What about it?
One of the nation's most prominent technology companies announced a deal Wednesday with a major Hollywood studio to try to jointly figure out how to keep people occupied and entertained as they are driven.
So, like, we can't just...
No, hold on, okay. Chris. So, this is Intel we're talking about, a company that's become a major player in self-driving technology.
The company Intel, the microchip company.
That's the one that apparently...
I can't wait for their made-for-TV movie by Intel. Should be riveting.
Well, it says here they've become a major player in self-driving technology through the acquisition of automotive sensor maker Mobileye. I've never heard of them.
That's the name of the camera that I have to, like, look at my garage when I'm not home. Mobileye.
Oh, like a security camera.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's affiliated.
Probably not.
But at any rate, they're partnering with Warner Bros. To convert a self-driving car into one that becomes an experimental, quote, entertainment pod.
So we can't for a minute. So what? Let's say this happens. You wake up in the morning. You go to take a dump. You're on your phone immediately.
Right.
Like if I go into the bathroom and I don't have my phone, I'll like pull my pants back up, go get my phone because
I have done that.
Okay, so you're on your phone. You leave the house. At least when you leave your house and get in the car, you have to drive, and you're not on your technology device.
You're not inundated.
You're enjoying. I enjoy driving, not in rush hour necessarily, but I enjoy driving. So that's gonna be gone. So now you're gonna go from your toilet to the car. And be like beamed even more information.
Inundated with more, entertainment.
You can't even get gas anymore without having a TV in front of you.
That's true. So that's interesting to think about that.
You can do nothing. So now this is going to be, pardon the pun, a vehicle to have more marketing.
It's actually an entertainment pod.
Okay, you're going to, well, there's no pun in that. That's no fun. So you're going to be inundated with marketing and movies. And do I really need to watch Netflix in my car?
Well, hold on, Chris, because as we continue, those being transported in the cars will no longer have to drive or pay attention to the road. So they may want to watch movies or TV. The windows of the car could become screens for augmented reality, or the car itself could be a mobile billboard.
Wow.
So there's a whole nother aspect to this.
For some reason, it reminds me of an iRobot. Is that where you get the motorcycle,
right?
I was just
thinking that, too.
So there's that Audi with the round wheels, and the thing's, like, auto-driving itself all over the place, and it's got screens inside or whatever.
Okay.
But for some reason, always in these movies, whether it's that movie or there's Demolition Man, too, where there's always this, like...
The one rebel.
The rebel, right? You've got the motorcycle or the Chevelle SS, and everyone's like, ooh, and they whisper quietly to themselves in deep, dark corners.
Well, it's so terrible. What's sad is that's going to be it. If these entertainment pods are going to be our...
Why do we need this?
I don't know.
I take solace in driving.
And I think most of our listeners do, because, hey, guess what? It's a car show.
They're all just going... Yes, we agree with you.
But I'll play devil's advocate here. You know, if these cars are actually going to be successful in self-driving, they're going to be much safer, right? We don't have to worry about old grandma in the next lane driving into us. They're going to probably be more efficient. Again, I'm trying to think really hard here. I'm trying to be devil's advocate.
That's kind of why I picked this next story. So I'll let you, I'll answer all those questions for you.
Okay. In a perfect world, because here's the thing. I hate
that term. I hate when someone says in a perfect world because they are just going to be talking about some utopian bullshit that's not possible.
No, this isn't that far off. Okay. So here, I'll say this. Here's the positive aspects of this technology. So let's say I'm driving my day job every morning in rush hour. I would admittedly much rather be in a quote entertainment pod, being able to get work done, answer emails, etc., and not have to be
That's a lot stuck different in bumper than watching Batman 7.
Well, you know, if you want to watch that as well,
Batman VR, where your car turns into you think you're driving the Batmobile.
Oh, think about all these opportunities.
That awesome. You could like drive, you're like the steering wheel, like VR turns into like the Batmobile right. Steering wheel, and you're like driving like
it's interactive
game.
Now.
Oh, I like video games. So now I might be in on this.
No, but my point is, so you can have this kind of utilitarian entertainment pod that brings you to work by itself on Monday and then still have your classic 911 in the garage when you want to go driving. The question becomes, when regulation gets involved, when we have all these self-driving vehicles on the road, are you going to be allowed to drive your vintage car then?
I think, I don't want to beat this subject to death because we talk about this electric car stuff every week. And that's one of the things I want to talk about is when you go and you look at Jalopnik or Car and Driver, Road and Track, and you try to go and you're looking for news articles, looking for interesting things to talk about, every third article
is about this. Well, people love doom and gloom.
But they're not even doom and gloom. It's just, this is what's happening. This is what's coming. Waymo this, Uber. I mean, it's all these things. And it's not like I want to talk about this shit all the time, but this is what's relevant right now.
So this is no longer Overcrest. This is the self-driving car podcast.
I'm going to shit on him as much as I possibly can. But.
Well, and here's something I was thinking about with this, not to beat a dead horse. We'll move on right after this, I promise.
We're not, because I'm going to make things really doomy and gloomy.
We'll continue on this. No, but my point is, so all the doom and gloom, we think this is coming, you know, next year. We're all going to have self-driving cars. We're never going to be able to touch a steering wheel again. I don't think that's reality at all, because yes, technology is progressing really quickly, but at some point, the government and regulation is going to step in and say, okay, we need to have some sort of standards for how these cars operate. You know, what are the safety parameters that they work within? And as soon as government gets involved in bureaucracy, this is going to become such an arduous development process that I don't think this is going
to happen
for a long
time. I think they want it so bad they're going to stay out of the way.
Really?
They want it so bad, and I'm going to prove it to you.
Okay, let's hear it.
All right. So this is one I found. This is actually from a U.S. Department of Transportation official document.
Okay, straight to the source.
If you actually tilt it just like this, all the words just changed to propaganda.
We can't see what you're doing, but yeah.
Yeah, so if you tilt it in just the right light, all the words change to propaganda.
I'm sure.
And I just want to read this to you guys. This is an official U.S. Department of Transportation. Jeez. What this is basically, you should love this. Embrace this.
Okay, let's hear it.
So it starts out, autonomous vehicle technologies have captured America's imagination. Mm-hmm. The reason is simple. Their potential to reduce and even eliminate the devastating loss of life to road deaths worldwide. According to World Health Organization, motor vehicle crashes killed 1.3 million people worldwide in 2015. Okay. In the United States alone, we lost 35,000. Now, I'm like, okay, well, what's 35,000 in 1.3 million? 0.02%. So America counts out for 0.02% of worldwide vehicle fatalities, yet we're the ones getting fucked by this because they're not going to have automatic driving cars in the Sahara Desert or South Africa or Syria or Russia.
We're not the ones
they're not
that
doing
are
this in Russia.
Statistics. Yeah.
No, this isn't happening. So we're not the problem. So we're basically using these statistics that are from some third world country where everybody's just, I've seen the Top Gear episodes. I know these people drive. Okay. That's what this is.
Well, hey, this brings up a good point. So, okay, you're talking about the statistics. I do believe that motor vehicle accidents are the number one cause of death in the U.S. So that's nothing to, you know, scoff at. But here's the problem, Chris. We're talking about our infotainment pods here. We're all on our cell phones while we're driving. This isn't about the cars being the problem.
And that's why I think
it's about these people who can't get their eyes out of their lap with their phone and watch where they're going.
I think that's what accounts for what they say is a spike of more than 7% above the previous year.
Wow.
Which I think is a serious problem.
That is a serious problem.
And despite increasing Department of Transportation safety standards, I mean, which are, the cars are so safe.
They are.
But they're not going to, if you're not driving, the, if you're not looking at the road, it doesn't matter. So, I mean, it's.
Yeah, it's, people need to take accountability.
I think we've all been guilty of probably texting and driving some.
We have.
And I will sometimes do it, but I try to be somewhat cognizant of where I'm doing it and what I'm doing.
Like, if I realize you're still actually driving a car.
I'm driving right now.
Yeah, little do our listeners know, we're actually recording this in a car.
So, but I will text and drive, but it's usually like empty road. I'm responsible for myself, you know, and even then I try to be really, really careful about doing it. And I think most people are like, oh, I never text and drive, which is just bullshit.
I'm actually slightly more sensitive about this topic lately because I had a good friend who was hit by a distracted driver who was texting their phone, and she got rear-ended doing, the guy that rear-ended was doing 60.
He didn't even
touch his brakes because his phone, he was looking at his phone. He didn't even look up to see who was rear-ending her.
See, that's, you know, I look at it in the way of, the cops have the computer in their car, right? So they're trained drivers, they've got the computer in the car, they're very safe. Accidents with police officers are very low.
Right.
Do I think that she should be typing on their little laptop all the time, looking at my license plate, seeing if they need to pull me over or not, or how many warnings I've gotten? No. But they're pretty safe drivers. They do it. They don't do it all the time. They do it when it's safe. They do it, and they're mindful of when they do it. I think there's a difference between, like, checking your phone and looking at a text message and, and like...
Or even changing the radio station.
Even like, that can cause
It doesn't
accidents.
Matter what you're doing. Yep. Yeah, it's just, it literally is the distraction that you're dealing with. So I know what you're saying. I mean... As long as you have some sort of standard where you're paying attention, absolutely. But, yeah, it's just ridiculous how this has become commonplace with our devices.
It's sad. I think Apple has a thing on your phone now that you can turn on where it won't work if you are driving.
Oh, really? Yeah. I haven't done that.
It'll, like, automatically send a message.
I do remember that because I just got the new iPhone, and it said something about that.
Yep. All right. So with 94% of fatal vehicle crashes attributable to human error, the potential of – or human idiocy – the potential of autonomous vehicle technologies to reduce deaths and injury on our roads urges us to action.
Okay.
All across America, innovators are jumping at the chance to be part of the autonomous vehicle revolution. It's led to the announcement of May 31st as National Autonomous Vehicle Day.
We've set up a day.
National Autonomous Vehicle Day. I even wrote LOL right next to that.
Yeah.
Like, are you fucking
kidding
me?
So what are we doing to celebrate?
I don't know.
And when is this again?
May 31st.
Okay.
This is literally bullshit. This is the most propaganda fucking garbage I've ever seen in my fucking life. I mean, it's government, so what do you expect? But this is pure propaganda right here. Allow me to continue, and then we'll laugh about it together.
Go ahead.
The life-saving potential of autonomous vehicles is the primary benefit of this new technology, but the benefits may be also realized in other ways.
Okay.
For example, American motorists currently spend more than 6.9 billion hours a year sitting in traffic, according to Who Cares. Autonomous vehicles could potentially smooth traffic flows, reduce commute times, vehicle emissions, and fuel costs. Additionally, many seniors and people with disabilities cannot currently drive, even with blah, 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 who cares?
Valid.
They're valid, so I'm going to skip over it. The potential to save millions of lives worldwide commands us to unleash the power of innovators across America that will deliver a safer vehicle future. Their ingenuity is why we can be bullish on the potential of autonomous vehicle technology.
Bullish. Okay. So, again, I'm going to kind of take the counterpoint here. Yeah. Propaganda in
big-ass font at the bottom of the
underlined
page.
That he wrote.
What bothers me is that this is not an objective piece at all.
Well, it's not supposed to be. This isn't reporting. A press release.
The government is not supposed to be lobbying for this type of stuff. It's not their job. I'm trying not to show my political views too much on this podcast, but this just seems...
Here's the thing, though, Chris. I don't have a problem
with
that.
This is so purple.
Because I don't care if the people driving
National
around
Autonomous
me,
Vehicle Day?
Okay, well, there's a National Hot Dog Day, too. A National
Yeah, but hot
day.
Dogs are awesome. Autonomous vehicles suck.
Why? I guess here's the crux to the point is, why do you care so much?
Because... No, it is the inevitability of it. It's going to happen. It is inevitable. And I see it as the death of something that has become so much a part of my life over the last 15 years. I breathe it every day. I work it every day. I write about cars every day. I shoot cars. This is my life. I have a fucking podcast about cars. I bought all this shit so I could sit here and talk to other people about cars.
Chris,
and here,
no one's
here's the government
you to
saying,
give up your car, though. That's where... My point
Where's National Non-Autonomous Vehicle Day?
That's every day. No, I guess I'm just curious why you get so fired up about this.
Because I see it as the death of my passion.
Here's an interesting analogy is we're both gun owners, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of regulation and a lot of, as you might say, propaganda against gun ownership
and gun
rights.
Is there a National Gun Day?
No, but we have the National Rifle Association.
Yeah, but that's a private company.
It's not a company. It's
an organization.
Well,
it's a private organization.
Right, but my point
is... This is not a private organization putting out this thing. This is the government creating National Autonomous Vehicle Day so we all feel bullish on the potential of autonomous vehicle technology.
And guess how many lobbyists and, I guess, lawmakers are out there fighting against people having the right to have guns right now as well. That hasn't... That's nothing new. So my point is, the analogy, we still have the right to own guns, and that hasn't changed at all because that is going on. Does that make any logical, that doesn't play?
That doesn't play for me because that's, you have private organizations, unions have lobbies, NRA has lobbies, corporate interests have lobbies. This isn't a private entity lobbying the government. This is the government lobbying its citizens for what they think is their own good.
Right. Well, that's nothing new either.
No, I just think it's stupid. It just bothers
really?
Me.
Really? I thought you liked this.
No, okay. That's just National Autonomous Vehicle Day.
I'm going to be celebrating. I don't know about you.
I'm going to spend the whole day in the bathroom.
No, you're just going to be doing burnouts in your new Hellcat.
I'll figure something out. All right. Anyway, so we can move on. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, so I was driving on the way back from Thanksgiving. And I pulled over to fill up the urea stuff in the car, and I saw a Widowmaker Jack sitting on the ground. And
Widowmaker Jack, we're talking about a
scissor jack that you crank
that comes
with your hand.
Usually with like a car, like yep. It's the emergency jack.
Yeah, it's an emergency jack.
Okay,
and they're junk. People die. They don't call it a Widowmaker for no reason, right? They kill people. They're junk. People use them when they shouldn't.
Well, I was gonna say it's for emergency.
Okay, so let's say you're driving. Wherever you're in the mountains, you're in the desert, you're out in the middle of nowhere,
okay,
and you get a flat tire. What are you gonna do?
Well, I've done this.
Okay, what do you do when you get a flat tire?
Well, I was in our RS4, which actually doesn't have a spare, which ironically they don't give you a jack because they didn't give you a spare in the first place. But I went and got a spare, and I think I just grabbed my Widowmaker out of my truck actually, and there I was on the side of the road. I didn't have an issue, Chris.
Were you on a flat surface?
Yes.
What if you weren't on a flat surface?
Then
would you just drive?
No, I've done this before too. I used the floor mat on the gravel of the shoulder and then put the Widowmaker on the floor mat to at least have some semblance.
So you and I are a little more intelligent than the average
right.
Joe on the freeway changes okay. tire or the Joanne or whatever you want to say. My problem with this is that these jacks are shit.
Okay.
They fold over and break. Even on flat surfaces, if you wiggle the car, if you do anything, let's say that you're trying to put a lot of torque to release a stuck wheel nut, they're unstable. The car
well,
can tilt.
PSA, that's why you do that before you jack the car up.
I'm trying to look at this from, I'm trying to think about what happened to this guy.
Right. So explain the situation again. I interrupted you.
I was at the AutoZone and okay. the AutoZone? I was at
AutoZone.
The AutoZone and next to the garbage can was a folded over.
So it's like crinkled.
It was folded in half, like
not scissored, but
no, it had folded like the broken. The car had clearly leaned over and crushed the jack.
Okay,
so I'm just trying to figure out: can't we come up with a better solution than that shitty jack that's been around forever? Like my 911 has a hole in the side of the car, and
right.
I know that some of the Mercedes stuff I think has a hole.
The MG does too.
Where you put the jack in, and then it's got a round plate on the bottom, and you just turn the thing.
Yeah,
and it's a square peg, so it's not going to rotate in any direction. Right. So it's you put it in.
Yeah,
it's
no,
not
like
going to rotate. Why can't we all do this? Why do we need to have the scissor jack that kills people, murders people? What if you're in a situation? What if you're on a gravel road and uh-huh. you get a puncture and all you've uh-huh. got is this Widowmaker? You're not going to. Well, this isn't a flat spot. I'm going to continue to drive on my wheel till I get to a location that's suitable for my jack that is supposed to help me out in this emergency situation. Now I'm stuck using this piece of shit and it's going to break and kill me.
Can I add a little maybe clarification and from your perspective here?
Sure.
How many people do you think are actually going to take the time to change their own tire nowadays instead of calling AAA?
I have no idea.
I don't think anyone uses these anymore.
I just saw a guy use it. He's That guy could be dead. I didn't see any blood,
But he was at AutoZone, so he's gonna say, I'm gonna say he's one of the maybe like 15% of the American populace who like does their own auto maintenance nowadays.
And it's still fucking broke on him.
Okay, well, some of this is user error, I'm sorry to say.
I'm sure it is, but these things, I've had them in my garage. I don't remember what I was doing, but it was my Mark IV Jetta, and I had it tip over on me. I don't remember, not on me, but I was like changing my wheels or something like that. And, and maybe I was trying to undo the lug nuts while the, you know.
See, what did I say? User error.
How are these things Underwriter Laboratories approved?
Because they have a warning sticker right on them that says danger, do not use if you're an idiot. No, I will one up you though. So Widowmakers, the Scissor Jacks are bad, but Chevy trucks, I think mine doesn't, but previous generations, they come with these also your standard Scissor Jack, the Widowmaker. And then they also have these little metal L brackets that are supposed to be wheel chocks. But because trucks are higher and the Scissor Jack can't lift the whole way, what they tell you to do, and there is a diagram, you can look this up, we should link to it, that you put these L brackets on the ground and balance the jack on top of them. And I'm mimicking it
right
now.
Well, to be fair, if it falls off the thing, you're not going to necessarily die because it's a truck.
Unless you took, like, both wheels off one side. But regardless, I agree. I'm tossing you a bone here.
Yeah.
It's a terrible design.
All these jacks are terrible. I just imagine, like...
Well, it becomes, you know, it's kind of the corporate bean counters. Why are they going to throw in, an industrial jack when they don't have to?
There's clearly better designs. European designs for jacks.
Just don't include one like our RS4.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah.
Don't even make the issue.
I don't even know what the jack is like in my 2015 Golf. All right. Anyway, we're going to skip the diesel thing because we're running out of time a little bit. I'll just have to keep pushing that.
If anyone, I was going to say that's your personal vendetta.
If anyone
follows you on social media, I think they've already heard you.
I want other people to know how much I hate it, and we'll talk about it another time. All right. So I got a few entries for the Craigslist Car of the Week, but not enough to make me happy.
For listeners that don't know what this is.
Yep. So I posted up on Facebook that I wanted people to go find me with no restrictions, cool shit on Craigslist. So these cars could be projects. They could be pieces of shit. They could be somebody posted an Urquattro rally car replica thing. That's cool.
Yep.
So I want to know anything. So a lot of people were like, I have a price limit. I'm like, no, I want to know anything cool.
So there's no criteria.
No criteria. Just send it in to me.
Okay.
And I'm happy to see it. So this is one I found myself. And I'm going to read you the ad, and then I'll show you the picture of it.
Okay.
This is my 1990 Volvo 740, a.k.a. Volvosaur. I bought the car back in March with a friend, not knowing it would wind up being my daily driver. I have put a lot of time and money into this car for modifications and to keep it on the road and running. It comes with everything you see, and the wing can be optional.
Oh, I'm excited.
Pros.
Yeah.
I replaced the head 2 months ago. Oil changed recently. Tires are only 3 months old. LED lights work.
Oh, where are these LED lights?
Muffler delete sounds good, but isn't too loud.
Delete. Love it.
Cons.
Okay, those were the pros, keep in mind.
Currently, it needs a fuel pump replaced, which is keeping it from starting. It turns over. Not an expensive fix, but need the money and need to move on with a new project.
I can't wait till we get to the price.
Oh, shit. I forgot to keep the price. I'm open to all offers. I've got it up on the computer over here. I'm open to all offers. Keep in mind, the parts alone on the car are worth close to $1,000. It's a Volvo, so it'll run forever with basic maintenance.
Well, once you replace the fuel.
He's got an Instagram. Let's give out his Instagram. Maybe we can get Instagram at Volvosaur. VOLVOSAUR for more photos.
So this is kind of playing. Oh, wow. I'm looking at the photo right here. What you guys can't see is he has extremely wide steelies.
It's a dollar. He doesn't have a price.
So there is no price. Best offer.
Yeah.
So, not only does he have the old, World War II shark teeth on the side of the car, he also has the rear wheel wells cut out with super wide steelies and what appear to be, dirt track tires on it, and the aforementioned wing on the back, which is exactly how you'd picture it. We have some driving lights, tape over the headlights, a la a... cafe racer type thing. I'll post a link here.
The thing is pretty awesome.
It is.
I mean, it's awesome, really.
Well,
I mean,
Volvosaurus.
It's the Volvosaur, and I love his name. If he didn't have the name Volvosaur for it, I'm not sure I would be into it.
And where is this listing?
This is in Atlanta.
In Atlanta. Yeah. Okay. So I was wondering, if we're limiting ourselves to the Twin Cities area.
For you to see.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at this with you. It is rich with the Volvosaur.
And now we got the other picture is not color, so now we got some color here.
Wow.
So he's got, those are probably 235 tires on the rear.
Yeah, those are some wide tires.
I like this. What the insurance company thinks I drive, and it's some shitty brick Volvo just stock. What I actually drive. And he's got the Volvosaur there.
I wish he would just replace the fuel pump so we could see this beast in action.
Yeah, that would be sweet. It says still broken 17 days ago. His hashtags are Europe, Asia, USA.
He's going international with this.
Oh, anyway.
I think Overcrest should buy this vehicle. Do we have a fund for that, Chris?
Oh, I don't. Send money. Send sponsorship. Send sponsorship. We'll do
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, I think you need to kind of make a call out here for next week that people need to
send us some stuff. Yeah, well, send in submissions. If not, I'll just find stuff, too. I got time. I can sit on Craigslist for a little bit. The other new segment I wanted to have on the show is the top four cars.
Okay.
Now, I picked four cars because I really think that you can have a daily driver.
Right.
Then you have four cars. If you have more than four cars, you're either an asshole or you're just a really rich dude that has too many cars.
Okay.
You know,
So you're limited yourself to four as well?
Even myself, four cars.
Do you have four right now?
No. Well, I have a daily driver and then a 911, and then my wife has a car.
Okay.
So I'm way under the limit.
For another one.
I'm set for golf on this. So I'm under par. You know, so but
I had four before I sold the 911. So I can open up another store.
But I'm just assuming you could have whatever you want. So you can have a daily driver plus four cars. So daily driver I don't give a shit about because everybody can have a daily driver. And I try to keep things reasonable too. Otherwise you'd be like, yeah, I want a Rimac and an Aventador and a Chiron. And
so do we have a hypothetical price point here?
No, but I'm gonna call somebody out if they're being gratuitous with it.
So we're asking for people to submit what they're...
No, this is for you.
Oh, okay. You're going to call me out if I'm being ridiculous.
Yeah, so this is for you. So whenever I have a guest on, I'm going to ask them and kind of get a feel for it.
Okay.
And,
so you said you don't care about the daily, but so right now I have, like I said, this Hummer truck as a daily. So I like having something more rugged as a daily. And I think if you remember years ago, there's a company that does the AMG... G55 wagon, but they made it a six-wheeler.
Yeah, I've seen that.
So that'd be my daily.
Okay.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
All right.
I'm just basically taking what I have now.
Is that thing gonna fit in your driveway?
Extreme. The driveway maybe. Definitely not the garage.
Yeah, the trailer hitch.
I have this hypothetical car collection, can I have a hypothetical like pole barn as well?
Fuck it. Why not?
Okay. There we go.
But it can only fit four cars.
Right. Some odd limitations here.
It's a 20 by 30 pull bar.
Yep. I'm going to have some sort of a project car. Maybe I'll do like some clapped out Ferrari, which doesn't exist at all. But that'd be like my project car that I spent time on.
Just like some barn find 250 GTO or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Even a 308 I'd be happy with.
Sure.
And then, so that's two. I got two more. I want to do something fun and fast. I'm in a Lotus Kick right now, so maybe I do like some Exige. They have a 260 special edition.
Okay.
That'd be cool. And I still have another spot left for something. I got my truck. I got my project. I got my fun car. Gosh, I might be good with three here, Chris.
Yeah, that's all you need. That's okay. You can be under the limit, too.
Do boats count? Because I need a boat. Okay, no. We're leaving those aside.
That's a different podcast.
What else would I do? I guess I'd have to have a 911. Even though I sold my 911, I'd still do
air-cooled. That's a really broad brush there.
Yeah, no, it's going to be air-cooled, long nose, long hood. Maybe like an ST tribute car or something.
Okay, all right. I'll let that slide. That seems reasonable.
Right?
Yeah, I can go with
Not
that.
Not really.
No?
Have you seen the price points of 911s lately?
Yeah, well, an ST tribute, you could build one of those for $200,000.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's a nice price.
I think that
limit.
Sounds fair. If you would have come in here and be like, I want a Singer, I'd be like, nope, ridiculous, too much.
So let's hear yours.
Oh, God.
Because here's the other thing with this. It's going to be fluid, right? In 2 months, you're probably going to have a different list.
I don't know, man. I honestly don't think about this ever.
Okay.
You know, people are constantly asking me what car I would get instead of the car I have now.
Yeah.
It's the car I have, really. I mean, maybe like a Testarossa or something.
You're lucky in that sense. I think a lot of guys still have a dream car.
Yes. I mean, I guess what it would probably be is I would probably have a Delta Integrale Evo 2.
Oh, yeah.
A Lancia Stratos rally car looking thing.
Yep, those are cool.
A Ferrari Testarossa.
The Testarossa.
Fuck yeah, I love those things so much.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would trade my car for one of those, I guess. I would do that. So that's three. So I get one more cool car and then my daily.
Four. So I got you.
So you were all done anyway. You didn't need it. Yeah. You wanted a boat, so you're out anyway.
Okay.
Oh man, I guess I would probably do like maybe like an old Cadillac Eldorado or something.
Just a cruiser.
Just a cruiser. Something to just hit the
What was the Lincoln Continental where it had the suicide doors in the rear, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I keep thinking of John F. Kennedy when I see those things. It just makes me sad. So, but yeah, so I got, what was that, one more? What did I say, Lancia?
Well, you got your...
two Lancias.
Daily, jeez. I guess.
Yeah, I got, well, then my 911, I guess, would be. My daily, it would just be...
the sport just, wagon.
No, I would, if I have enough money for all this shit, I don't care about gas prices. I'm just going to take like a 2018 Chevy Tahoe or Suburban or
That's
something.
That's boring.
It's a daily driver. What? Who cares? My wife has got to be able to drive the thing.
Life's too short.
I got
to
be able to put kids
boring
in
cars,
it.
Chris.
That's why I have a Lancia Stratos.
Yeah, but the kids won't fit in the back of that one.
Yeah, I suppose.
Oh well,
they can fit back there if they want. Well, guys, that's all we have got time for today. I wanna thank Jake for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. It's been fun.
And make sure you follow us on Instagram at OvercrestPod. And we're at Overcrest Podcast, one of the two. You find us. Hit us up on Facebook. Leave us a 5-star review with a little bit of words if you could. Give us a little bump in the iTunes and Stitcher world. We appreciate it. We'll see you guys next week.